You're listening to The Food Talk Show. Welcome to The Food Talk Show, your weekly dose of all things food, drink, tech, innovation, all sorts of interesting, wonderful things. Normally I'm joined by with Sue Nelson, but unfortunately she can't make it today. So I'm joined with by the wonderful Steve Griffiths. Welcome, Steve.
Welcome, and thank you for having me along. I'm not sure about wonderful, but I normally host the Tech Talk Show, so it's great to be across here talking about some food. And we have got some great guests on the show, Guy. We've got Ed Smith and Richard Wilkinson from Doisy and Dam, which make the most amazing chocolate. And we've got some in front of us here.
Yeah, haven't we? Listeners of the show will know that my favourite part of the show is the tasting portion, and we're not going to disappoint today.
No,
we've got huge stacks of chocolate in front of us.
Great packaging as well.
It's beautiful.
We've also got Vicky Henley from the Coconut Co. Hi, Vicky.
Hi there.
And we've already got some of her products on the table, which I'm really looking forward to having.
Some really interesting
looking
stuff. Not just your typical coconut waters and coconut oils and stuff, but some really interesting sounding stuff from the other side of the world.
Yeah, and also on the show we've got Creator Cabin, which is really interesting, actually. It's about pop-up structures, particularly that can be used around food production. So they come ready-made and all with the necessary certifications for food production. And that's a pre-record with Sue. So Sue Nelson is actually joining us in some shape or form today.
Here in spirit, if not in body.
Yeah.
So we'll have to drag her back from her holiday at some point. I'm sure she's off gallivanting somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm just looking at that chocolate and I think we should start.
I think we just need to jump straight into it, don't we?
Yeah.
Let's get into it.
So Ed and Rich, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining
us.
Tell us a little bit about, you've been on a journey really from when you first started creating such great products. How did it all start for you two?
So we started around about 3 years ago. Ed and I have been friends for the last 25 years now, and we both, I was working in finance in London, Ed was working in marketing in America. We'd always wanted to start a business together, and we just kind of got bored of our jobs.
So why food? What guided you towards that?
Well, we were both getting a little bit heavy in our desk jobs, working long hours, eating bad food. So we were looking for kind of ways to eat better, and we came across superfoods and these amazing different things that are full of vitamins and minerals and things to make you feel healthier and to make you feel better. And we just thought they were getting a bad rap. Often they tasted horrible, and people weren't really being as creative as they could have been with them. So we just started experimenting, and we found that naturally we love chocolate, but we wanted to make chocolate that was slightly better. So we took kind of all the rubbish out of it and just made honest, good chocolate, and into which we put these amazing exotic superfoods that people haven't heard of before.
Fantastic. Have you got some examples for us, just to give us a bit of context? What kind of superfood additives do you have in your chocolate?
So in front of us we have maca, vanilla and cacao nibs. We've got a white chocolate with lemon, poppy seed and baobab. And we've also got a 74% dark with coconut and lacuma.
Some really interesting stuff. Some of those things I've never even heard of as well. So where do they hail from, and how did you kind of end up coming up with some of these recipes and putting these things all together? Was it a lot of testing and a lot of eating of chocolate?
It was a lot of eating of chocolate.
Sounds terrible.
It was kitchen testing, melting down all sorts of different types of chocolate from all over the world, tasting first which is the best type of cocoa we want to use. And at the moment all of our chocolate is Dominican, single origin Dominican chocolate, and the superfoods come from all over the world, wherever they grow naturally and grow best.
So did you focus on one or two superfoods first of all, and then that's brought you to expand, or has it always been a broad range of products you've included?
We've always wanted to use loads and loads of different ones, but we started off with just three flavours, and that had goji berries in it, we had maca powder and spirulina, and that's really where we began, because those were superfoods we knew we could get them in really high quality organic form. And we'd managed to make a product that was delicious with it, but we always knew we wanted to expand and start to kind of broadened our horizons.
Because we talked to lots of producers of niche foods and different types of foods, and actually securing a sustainable and reliable and even quality source of products is really, really difficult. And actually, did you find that, you know, going to the Dominican Republic, that must have been, or Dominica, was it? Was it Dominican Republic? Yeah, yeah. Was that difficult to actually get the high quality you needed consistently?
Well, as a small business, it's really, really difficult because you don't have much scale. So you don't have much bargaining power, and you can't really, it's very difficult to go direct to source. So as a result, we are really reliant on the importers we use and the brokers we use.
Yeah.
So we have to trust them to do as much of the work as possible. Where possible, we go, we trace everything back to source. But that's why, that's a big reason why everything we do at the moment is organic, because it gives us comfort in what we're sourcing. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say that we've got all this chocolate in the studio, and I'm thinking that we should probably have a bit of a taste, and we can see, you know, what the thing really, really looks like and tastes like. I'm just looking from a distance at the packaging. It's absolutely beautiful, very colourful, lots of patterns. There's even almost a there's something about it which I can't quite put my finger on, but it either says to me like 30s style or 70s style, but it's that kind of vintage kind of thing going on.
It's the packaging came from. After we'd done the product, we obviously had to have something to wrap it in, and we looked at the existing chocolate category, and it was so boring. There was all you could see was brown or black or gold. So we wanted to do something which we thought was visually appealing to us, a little bit more fun, and would stand out on shelf. So we focused on colours and shapes and also the simplicity of the design itself.
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful.
I mean, all we can hear is rustling at the moment as we're diving into the products.
It's a terrible thing to do on the radio, but you know, it does look absolutely beautiful. And instead of it being just like a foil wrapped bar or something like that, it's like some kind of cardboard packaging. So it's very firm and very premium feeling.
And all recyclable.
Fantastic. Let me just pass this one around. There's some coconut in this one. I'm sure Vicky will appreciate it.
Thank you.
So you talked about your latest product. Is that the maple toasted rice, or was there something else you've done recently?
No, that is the latest bar that's come out, the maple toasted rice and pink salt. And it was as a response to one of our other flavours, the date and Himalayan pink salt, going down very well with our customers. And so we wanted to make a dark version of a salted bar. These are both kind of our answer to a sort of a healthier salted caramel. So we released the maple toasted rice and pink salt pretty recently, and it seems to be going down quite well. We've had some good responses to it.
We had Ugly Drinks on the show last week, and they specifically said when the guys come in next week, you want to make a beeline for the Dayton Himalayan pink salt.
I've got that right here.
So clearly very popular.
So what does the toasted brown rice add to it in terms of, is that to do with consistency, or is it to do with taste as well?
It's a combination of taste and texture that comes from the rice. You don't often find large inclusions in chocolate bars. And this, we think, adds a fantastic texture and a nice sort of like a bit of a crunch and a bit of a chew to the overall flavour.
I was really surprised. I started tucking into the coconut and is it lacuna?
Lacuma.
Lacuma. And I was surprised that it had like some texture. It wasn't completely smooth. So there's definitely those kind of bits and pieces in there. And you can really, really taste those coming through. It's fantastic.
It's really, really important to us that every bar has taste, texture and superfood, because that's what keeps us kind of differentiated in the market, because most other companies, they'll either put the inclusions on the back of the bar or they'll have tiny, tiny inclusions. And for us, it's really important to have a real texture in there that you can actually notice and see.
And all of this is handmade and made by yourselves in your own facility? Yeah?
Well, not literally us anymore.
No, but...
Did it used to be, though? Were you making it yourselves on the kitchen table kind of thing?
The test bars were.
Mm.
And then we had to find someone to produce it for us. And all we had was our savings from our previous jobs, which were not substantial at all. And we had no way of sort of raising any money, because we had no credentials, no history in the food industry or anything like that. So we had to find someone who was going to produce incredibly small batches for us. And we did. And it was a brilliant partnership. She was based up in Norfolk and she produced small batches of bars for us, which we then took out and sold to all sorts of independent shops around London. Since then, we've had to step it up. And so we've got a larger production facility in the Peak District where we produce, how many a month do you reckon?
I think this year we're looking to produce around 60 tons of chocolate overall.
Yeah. That's a lot of chocolate.
That is a lot of chocolate.
I actually have it in my notes here. It's somewhere we've found 65 tons of chocolate that you're looking to produce. And that's the equivalent, for anybody who happens to be interested, to, what was it, something like 10 T-Rexes or 15 hippos, if anyone needs that kind of comparison.
Yeah. We like to compare them to animals.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
did that come from you guys? It came from your website?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a nice bit of fun to add to the mix as well.
Yeah, you can't eat a hippo in one go, though. You have to obviously start in small places first.
I don't know. It sounds like a challenge.
Vicky, what was your favourite? What did you like best?
I think the coconut, really. It's got it, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, yeah. The dark chocolate was lovely as well. This one. The maple toasted rice and pink salt.
Yeah, I love that, actually. I thought it was really lovely taste.
I'm a dark chocolate fan.
Mm. Mm. And it's not... It's got a bitterness, but it's not really... You know, because some dark chocolate can be just... But it's really, really, the taste is excellent. Have you tried it?
We've all been kind of wooed by all of this delicious chocolate. We're just kind of like sitting there going, you know, peacefully enjoying all of this stuff. So I was reading somewhere that you guys have done quite a bit of changes to the packaging and to the product. Not necessarily the chocolate itself, but you've reduced the thickness of the bars or something like that. This is a fairly recent thing, is it?
Yeah, it is. We're always doing... everything we can to improve the product. One of the things we learnt from running such small batches in the first place was that you do end up spending more money on it, but on each batch, and therefore each bar costs a little bit more money, but you have a lot more flexibility as to what you can change quickly. So when we first started selling, we did all sorts of samplings and found out from our customers, the people who were buying it from us, exactly what they wanted. So we were able to tweak the recipe next time. So if they wanted more or less goji berries in the next bar, we were able to react to that quite quickly.
Wow.
And one of the things is the thickness of the bar. Mm. So we've brought it down from 100 to 80 grams for a better mouthfeel, better texture, better taste. And also we've brought down the price to match that. So it's disproportionately better value now than it was before.
That's really interesting, and it's certainly it is quite thin as a bar. You know, it's not like your classic what is it, like Dairy Milk or Bourneville or something, which feels really hard to chew through, and you know, tastes like crap as well. But you know, because it does have that kind of snap to it, it's almost got that kind of oral quality of, you know, it feels nice to eat and sounds nice to eat as well. It's brilliant.
Yeah, we think it does improve the bars a lot, and the feedback that we're getting from I think we did it about 2 months ago, and the feedback we're getting so far has been really positive about it.
Fantastic.
And it's cheaper.
which and everyone great. Loves a bargain, especially where chocolate is concerned.
Particularly with like the Toblerone gate and everything like that, where they're making the bar smaller and keeping the price the same or increasing it.
I'm convinced they've been doing that with Mars bars since I was a kid, because you know they keep getting more expensive and I think they're getting smaller personally.
So I know you've gone to various supermarkets now and you're actually on the shelves of quite a few. Lots of people that listen in are food producers. How difficult was that? And how long has it taken you to get your product into the places that you wanted to?
A long time. I think I remember when we had one of our first meetings with a buyer of something different at Whole Foods just before we'd even launched. And this was in September. And I was asked when we expected to get into Waitrose. And I said January. And it's actually taken 3 years to get into Sainsbury's. But we've just launched now in March. It's been a long, long, hard slog, but I don't think we're unique in that. I think everyone finds it the same.
And do you think you get to a critical mass where you get to one large retailer and then others tend to line up quickly afterwards? Or is it a question of deal with one, then regroup and then attack another? Or you know, how does it work?
I think it can help or it can hinder, because before you get into your first grocery multiple, you're selling the dream, and then once you're in it, you're selling based on the numbers, and so you have to support a potential listing with good numbers. So it could really help, or it could make it a little bit more difficult.
So where next? Where are you looking? Have you got markets you're looking at, or are you solely looking at UK and large scale retailers?
We're still very small. Yeah. And we just launched in Sainsbury's, and we launched in Holland & Barrett last week. So for us, I think there's a bit of a period of consolidation, making sure that we are getting everything right from a production perspective, keeping the quality as high as it possibly can be, and making sure we're selling well in the places where we are at the moment. And then once we're confident about that, we'll start thinking about other places we want to launch.
Sounds good. And any future plans to expand into maybe even different lines of product? I mean, already the product range in chocolate is quite large, but any future plans in that direction?
Yeah, we want to take the concept of creating indulgences which are better for you across all of chocolate. We've got all sorts of things we've tried out, some of which have crashed and burned pretty quickly, some of which we're working on for the back end of this year, hopefully for a release in supermarkets at the back end of this year.
Fantastic. Well, I guess whilst you are still small, you get that benefit of being able to like iterate. I mean, Steve and I both come from like a tech background, and it sounds very similar to like a tech startup doing their, you know, small iterations of, you know, doing, you know, testing one thing, measuring the results, and then seeing what happens. And, you know, it sounds like a great way to, you know, embrace that part of the journey at the moment where those things are an option rather than when you get to this massive, great big scale and then it becomes like turning a battleship, which is, you know, very, very slow, of course.
We're already finding as we've grown up, even this year, that it's becoming more and more difficult to do it because trying to sync up all of the buying that you have to do is really tough to try and sort of completely change one thing and start a new thing at once. And the volumes we keep on having to buy go up. So it's becoming more difficult, but I think we trained ourselves pretty well early on to keep our eye to make sure that we can still iterate.
Plus that creative process ultimately is why we kind of started. So it's the most fun part.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately that sometimes you become so removed from it, it's difficult if the company becomes larger and larger.
Yeah.
And you clearly got a passion about chocolate, clearly you've got a passion about superfoods as well. And that comes across in the products. They're great, and I love the salted caramel, the maple, and that taste is beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It's a real explosion of flavour, and we look forward to many, many more years of many more interesting products and combinations.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking drinking chocolate or other types of.
Already working on it.
Oh, there you go. Where can people go to get more information? Because I know you retail online as well, don't you?
Yes, so online on our website, which is just doisyanddam.com. There should be our social media's there as well. It's just at doisyanddam. And all our stockists are listed up there as well.
Brilliant. Fantastic.
Great. Well, I just can't wait to see the next iteration of what's going on, really. Can you, Guy?
Absolutely, yeah, no. I'll be keeping an eye out for them. And they're not hard to spot because the packages are beautiful and brightly coloured, so you'll see them a mile away.
Great. So, moving on, Guy, yeah?
Indeed. I think we're going to take a quick break and have a bit of a pre-recorded session. So we're going to take a quick pause here in the studio while we regroup. And you can head off and listen to Sue, who is here now in voice, not in body.
Exactly. Talking about Creator Cabin.
So I'm here with Claire and Sebastian Dont. And they're from a company called Creator Cabin. Sounds a bit odd, but it's absolutely fascinating and really important to listen to this, I think, if you're at that stage where you're at your kitchen table and things are going really, really well and you're starting to sell amazing amounts of stuff and actually you're beginning to really annoy the family because you can't make any food in the house and starting to get a little bit worried about health and safety. So let's talk to Claire first. Claire, Creator Cabin, you would say actually that you're a manufacturing company and that you specialise in making modular buildings. But it's much more exciting than that. It's really not boring, and it's not in construction at all, is it really?
Slightly construction, but most of it is DIY. It's a self-build, and it comes complete kit for people to build themselves. We can help them build. But so many people say you've got to know your market, but it's so flexible. It could be a food prep room. It could be an artist's room. It could be anything you want it to be. So it's quite hard to target who we are. But I know today we're talking about the artisan. Yeah. The mustard Marys, as we call them, who start in the kitchen and then they have to get out because of health and safety.
But if I wanted to get rid of my husband and shove him in a snug somewhere, I mean, that's just as feasible. It's literally any type of room.
It's any type of room because it's insulated. So it started off as being, they're cold room panels. So it's not just a shed that's, everything is in the winter is just horrible and green. It's a proper room.
Proper room. Now, I know that you've had some great clients, so I'm going to ask Sebastian this, but I know you've had an artisan cheese kitchen that suddenly needed to happen. And apparently this guy suddenly received 45 goats and really had to start getting a crack on. Is that typical of the ridiculous things you get asked to do?
Well, when the goats are ready to milk, you have to take the milk and turn it into cheese. So, the goat can't wait for funding. So here we go. And yes, we did.
So that's the sort of request you got. I've got this problem, help me, I need it now. And then you would go and look at what the issues are for this guy and then actually design that space specifically to make sure he can then do what he needs to do.
No, we do not design the space. A client comes with a plan. The space is designed with health and safety because there is a whole process to organize and so on. So they send us a plan and we would build it.
So they've got to have a pretty good idea of what they want. I guess, though, if they're already making stuff, that they've already worked out, actually, and they've probably got a pretty good process going.
We also have on our website various plan. So if you're looking for ideas, you can consult our website. And those are things that we have built and that have worked.
So anyway, those are sort of templates that people can use. Claire, what are you finding in terms of some of the artisan stuff? Because I know you've done stuff for butchery and apple pressing and things like that. People reach this stage, and we quite often talk about it on the programme, where they are becoming successful. And then all of a sudden they've got to scale up. And some of them obviously don't want to go into a factory. That's far too big a leap. But what's the observations you're seeing about some of the food production?
A lot of it we do with farmers because they have empty barns full of rubbish. So if they clear them out and they put in one of our units, they don't need planning permission. So it's a very quick way for them to earn money from their produce if they're going to start making cheese and their milk, for example.
So just to get that clear then, so essentially your building will go inside the building. So of course it doesn't need planning permission. It's because nobody can see anything. It's just inside.
It's inside. It doesn't touch the walls of the building. And you can take it down if you move house a few years later down the line.
Genius. It's absolutely genius. Absolutely genius. So again, my sort of question about what you're seeing, people suddenly, what, are just annoying the family or they're running out of space and suddenly, particularly in the food production side, you know, need to find somewhere?
It's often a lot of mothers on maternity leave get quite bored and they think, oh, I'll just do this. And suddenly it turns into something that they couldn't have predicted would be that successful. And they need something quickly and they need it now. And we can deliver within 4 weeks.
And is it always inside another building or it is a standalone thing too?
It can be exterior. It's more expensive. But as long as you've got a level base and you've got the right planning permission, we can go outside as well.
So, Sebastian, you have a lovely French accent. I'm allowed to say that as a girlie. So I'm sorry, it's a bit sexist. But how on earth did you start this business? You know, I don't know anybody else who does it, by the way. And so how did you start? And you've been in France for a long time and now you've just come back over, haven't you?
Yes, we have. Yeah, absolutely. I basically took over a family business and we were bending steel. That's and we were looking for a new activity. So we started building sort of porta cabin type thing. And the farmer asked me for a porta cabin to slaughter his chicken in.
And that's slaughter his chickens. Yeah. Well, I suppose you don't want to do that in the kitchen, do you?
No, you don't, especially when it's 150 a day. I mean, it gets a bit messy. And I thought, right, nobody else is doing it in France either. And then someone asked me to put the porta cabin. Sorry, I might not be using porta cabin. It's it's okay. Someone asked me to put it in a barn. And that was a complete nightmare because obviously the barn has a roof and you have to crane them in and so on. So I thought there must be a better way. And that's when I developed the kit, which we really are the only one doing.
It's almost like if people love the old IKEA thing. It's a bit IKEA, isn't it? I mean, get your little tools out and build your own room.
It's a massive Lego set.
Or Meccano, if you remember that.
Yeah, or Meccano set. Yeah, all the panels are cut to size and I send a plan saying, you know, you've got partition A, B, C, and this is where this goes. And this is where the door is and so on. So everything is set on the plan and then all the panel come cut to size, which allow for very quick construction. We would build 100 square meter with quite a few partition in 2 or 3 days.
God, that's amazing. That's amazing. And Claire, how did you get involved in the business? Have you always been involved in the business? Because it is a family business, isn't it? Or do you do the fluffy bit? And do you do the marketing and sales? We bet you do, don't you? Mm.
I do a lot of that. I was an interior designer when we met. And then we left London and we've had 3 fantastic children. So I took some time out, which was great. But I was very ready to go back into something. And Sebastian asked me to launch the English company, which we did 2 years ago nearly.
And why are you over here now?
Our daughter was at university, our son quite enjoyed school over here, and it just made sense to come. My father.
But are you still a sort of European country? You're doing it in all sorts of places, but you just relocated to England.
So the English company deals primarily with England, but the French company deals with the whole of Europe. But that's where our factory is based, in South Champagne.
Amazing. Well, it's a great product, and it's a great company. If anybody's interested, particularly, you know, in terms of the sort of food production side, you need to go on to createacabin.co.uk and have a good look on that. And I'd highly recommend the sort of time lapse videos. It's really good to see that. And you can find out about Claire and Sebastian on LinkedIn, of course, and all that sort of stuff. Any final comments in terms of plans for the future? You're going to take over the world?
Oh, I don't know about taking over the world. We are looking to develop in England, certainly. We have to find the right marketing mix, and we're still working on it. But no, we'd be very happy to develop the company.
It's a good solution, isn't it? And a quick solution, and a sort of not quite so expensive solution for somebody who's going to the next stage. You're the marketing side, plans to take over the world?
Ah, well, we're dealing with the wonderful Tabitha, the marketing assistant, who you know well, and she's really giving us a good structure at the moment to work from.
Got to have a good marketing plan, haven't you? Well, Sebastian and Claire, really good luck with it. And again, just to remind you, createacabin.co.uk.
Thank you very much.
So that was Sue Nelson talking about Create a Cabin. And actually, speaking with food producers, trying to establish production facilities can be extremely costly, and I don't know if that's something both of you have found. Vicky, I don't know if you where you produce yours, but is that an issue for you as well?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we produce all of our products down in Wales, but it's really difficult, we found, trying to get someone who can do it well and do small runs when you start. You know, it's not profitable for people sometimes to take on these small runs, so they've got to like the product, know and trust you, and think we'll grow with you.
And has that, Ed and Rich, has that been the same experience for you as well?
Certainly, yeah. It's exactly the same thing. Small runs, because no one's got enough money to put through, you know, a 10-ton run of something.
Yeah.
But often that costs the manufacturers more, you know, just to set the machines up, just to run 1,000 bars or something like that. So it's a real problem.
And having the quality of facility in terms of cleanliness and all of the issues that go with routine and actually recording health and safety, food safety, that is also an issue as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we got two issues on the side, is that we're fully organic certified and vegan certified as well. So trying to find packers that would deal with all of that and all the paperwork that comes with it, that was also tricky, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I worked with a facility that produced nut products on one line, and then they had date paste and others on another, and they wanted to make them actually completely nut-free certified, and that was extremely difficult, and the controls between the two areas were very tight.
Yeah, so the idea of being able to spring up just a a small space or an extension to your existing premises with these Create a Cabin guys sounds fantastic, you know.
Yeah.
And the fact that
great.
They're all, you know, food hygiene related or certified as it whatever it is brilliant.
And it's the speed of fabrication and actually installation that's a crucial part as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. And you know, I guess that comes back again to that idea of being able to iterate. You know, if you could literally pop up a structure where you can go and do some testing, like, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, or, you know, at a maybe piggyback onto an event or something like that as well, sounds really useful.
Well, on to our next guest, Guy.
Indeed, that sounds like an excellent plan, Steve.
Okay, so Vicky Henley, and Vicky's from the Coconut Company, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
So
would it be right in saying that you're nuts about coconuts?
Yeah.
Oh,
so I just had to throw it in there, you know.
Someone's got to say it.
took me all week to come up with that one.
He's been practicing on me, you know. He's actually, yeah. It's all about delivery, apparently. So we've got a range of things in front of us, but perhaps first of all, tell us a little bit about your company, how long you've been going, and what prompted you to go towards that market?
To get there, yeah. Well, we've been going for about 18 months now, so we're quite new. I mean, the story of how it came around is I was living out in Asia for 10 years and doing something completely different, another career. And I met my then business partner out there, Mike Pilgrim. He sits out in Hong Kong and he just started looking at the coconut world. He was in the coconut world, but very much the industrial side. He was processing the husks. And I think a few years back, coconut was starting to get quite big in the food scene. And I loved what he was doing. And I said, look, you know, I really saw potential there. And I said, I knew I was coming back to the UK. And I said, right, let's bring it back to the UK and I'll look after Europe. And he's carrying on with Asia. And the main premise of the company really is that there's a lot of coconut out there already, certainly in coconut oil and coconut water. That's mainstream. You know, it's in every supermarket, in every corner store. Yeah, is that those products are, you know, it's pretty saturated marketplace, certainly coconut water and coconut oil. But when we started looking at what other things could be made from the coconut, you know, that's what really intrigued me. And that's what we concentrate on. So we've got a range of coconut vinegars, which is quite unusual, but certainly...
Very interesting.
Yeah, really gaining in popularity, these are. We do a range of cooking sauces, which again, you probably think, how can that come from the coconut? But these are primarily from the sap of the coconut. So instead of using the meat or the water, they come from... If you make an incision in the trunk, you get a really quite nutritious and sort of milky-looking substance that comes out, and that's the sap.
Very
and if you, you can either ferment it, becomes a vinegar, or you can heat it strongly and it becomes a syrup. Heat it even more strongly, it becomes a sugar. Or add a few more things into it, a salt and dash of nectar and garlic, and you get the sauces.
So what came first?
Out of the product range?
Yeah, tell us.
Probably, what do we start off? We do have some of the regular things. We do a coconut flour and a coconut sugar, and this... coconut milk powder. Again, that's one of our best sellers, actually. I mean, you may know that there's some other big names in the market that do coconut milk powders. But when we look closely at them, strangely enough, they had a lot of sort of strange additives in that we thought were a little bit unnecessary. But they also have a dairy component, which you'd think when you were drinking a coconut product, if it's coconut milk powder, why has it got dairy in?
Because so many people use coconut milk or coconut oils and products as a way to remove dairy. Like, I know that there's a couple of chocolate companies actually that I've come across that do dairy-free chocolate, and it's usually got a lot of coconut in it. I think Onbar is one of the ones that springs to mind. The idea of putting like whey powder or some kind of milk product into a coconut milk powder sounds crazy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, many of them have a lactose stabiliser in.
That's normally...
And that's what we've got rid of.
That's how they stabilise the actual liquid, don't they, from separating us?
Yeah,
That's where the gluten's used to bind it as a binding agent, is that right?
I think you're right, yeah, exactly. That's a stabiliser. But we found you don't really need to add that. And we've just come out with an organic certified version of this. And so it's just much purer and simpler. And it's 97% coconut milk with a tiny, I think, 0.5% of maltodextrin from tapioca and a tiny bit of cornstarch in. And that just stops it from clumping and becomes a free-flowing product.
So it's vegan and gluten-free, which is great for people to use. And coconut milk, tell us a little bit about what's its main use in terms of in food preparation or drinks?
Yeah, it's just a little bit more convenient than having a can of coconut milk liquid sitting around. Because when you open up those cans, actually they go off really, really fast. Mm. Even when you kept it in the fridge, they go off in about 48 hours. So I personally found that when you make a curry or smoothie or whatever you may do with it, you open up, use your dash, and then you don't really know what to do with the rest of the can and it gets wasted. But when you put it into a powder form, that lasts for about 18 months in your cupboard. So you just reseal it up there. It's just really convenient and you don't waste food and it's a lot cheaper to buy it like that.
So can you put that straight into a curry or do you recommend that you mix it with anything first of all? So straight into
a curry, as long as you've got some liquid there, straight in, just swirl it around and you'll get your coconutty
that
curry.
Lovely.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
I like that idea. It's really, it's nice and convenient as well. And like you said, it's not going to take up lots of space in the cupboard. You're not going to stack up a load of cans and it's more reusable, resealable.
Yeah.
Does it have a thickening effect?
Maybe a tiny bit, yes. Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Because obviously curries tend to be quite a bit more watery from that part of the world, don't they? They tend to be a lot more liquidy, and whether it's a Thai green curry or red curry, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So, with that, you can control. I mean, you put as much as little in as you want, really, and it'll thicken up a bit.
Speaking of parts of the world, where are these sourced from? Because I'm assuming a lot of people talk about locally grown and all that kind of stuff.
I'm afraid we're not locally.
I don't think we're growing coconuts in the UK just yet. But so, where are they from, and how did you get them here?
So primarily from the Philippines. We have two different suppliers out there. The lady, who is a lovely lady we've been working with for the last 3 years, she runs a farm out in really in the middle of nowhere, about 5 or 6 hours from Manila. And she makes all of the sap-based products for us and comes up with new ingredients and recipes and thoughts. And she does a bit of, that side for us as well. But she doesn't export to anywhere else. So we were her first export client, which was pretty difficult to get it out of the Philippines.
And do they just send you the raw ingredient, the raw product, and then you do whatever else you need to do with
it on this
side?
We do a little bit of mixing in Wales, So they send it to us in great big IBCs or drums and vats of it. And then we do either the filling or the mixing in Wales.
So I'm now looking at the organic coconut vinegar, which is really it's slightly cloudy.
It's a very natural. What we do there is it's unfiltered and it's unrefined and it's unpasteurized. So we don't. If you go on the supermarket shelves and buy sort of cheap malt vinegar, your bog standard. On your chip vinegar, that has been just heavily processed, been refined, all the good bits have been taken out. But if you see in here, we have a lot of sediment in the vinegar, and that's the good bit. You don't want to throw that away, really.
That's got all the taste in it.
That's got the taste and the flavour, and that's got all the... we keep in a little bit of the mother of vinegar as well.
I'm going to pass it around. It's got it's almost got a sweet smell to it as well. You're right.
And what it doesn't have is, of course, it's tart. It's a vinegar. But if I should have bought in another bottle of, your bog standard vinegar, so you can see the difference. That's much sharper taste. And this is a much milder.
It almost smells like a Demerara sugar or something.
Yeah, there is a
real sweetness to it.
Yeah. It's almost like a balsamic in a certain way, but not as... Yeah. So where would you recommend... Again, sometimes you can put vinegars in curries and other things. What would that be used for?
That's certainly what in the Philippines they do. It's part of the national dish and, it certainly goes in curries. But salad dressings and, add it a dash to gravies, it's very nice. What we're finding some people are using ours, though, is that it's like akin to sort of really good quality apple cider vinegar. And people take a tiny little dash in their water in the morning with a bit of lemon juice and a bit of, a swirl of honey or something. And it's just quite, they like it for a sort of, it's quite cleansing for the body. And a good quality natural vinegar it does that.
Very interesting.
Carry on.
It sounds like a really interesting combination and not the kind of place that I would have expected a vinegar to be used, like in a drink in the morning.
Yeah.
But I've heard of people putting like coconut oil in their coffee. Yeah. There's, I think they're called Bulletproof Coffee. There's a company in the States who have this, really popular, almost like a cult following for, putting coconut oil in the coffee, shaking it up, and it becomes this really, really creamy kind of thing. So I guess it's no different than that, really, just a slightly different use of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually drinking vinegars are a trend that's quite popular in the US and that's coming over here now.
Yeah, I've seen like pickle tiny stuff dash. As well.
Yeah. A lot of the fermented food trend actually is obviously very big and that sort of sits within there. And so I think that's why people are using it, just taking a tiny dash. But drinking vinegars, I think that's the next thing you'll see come over.
Here we go then.
Watch this space.
Yeah, watch that space. That's fermented in the Philippines, yeah?
Yeah, it's fermented for 10 months in barrels and completely untouched, unfiltered, and then we bottle it from there. So it's just akin to a really, a good quality vinegar.
So the next thing we're looking at, guys, it's organic amino source, which is like
I saw this on the website earlier today, and I was like, because you've got about four different flavors of it, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
I've never heard of this kind of sauce, so please tell us more.
Well, the name came from probably the fact that the name came from the fact that it's got a lot of amino acids in there, so amino source. Now, I have to say, it is a bit of a funny name because it doesn't really explain what it is.
Because it kind of looks a bit like a soy sauce.
It is. It's kind of akin to a soy sauce, except it's not made from soy.
It's smoky as well.
So, basically, it is the fermented coconut sap, so like a vinegar in there. There is coconut nectar, so the syrupy substance, a little bit like a sweet honey, and garlic and sea salt. And that's all that's in there. But what it makes is a really sort of sharp, but really tasty and salty and slightly spicy sauce that is akin to a good quality soy sauce.
Yeah,
so it's really for people who want to avoid soy. Mm. There's, you know, it's gluten-free.
I was about to say, yeah.
Slightly lower salt than some of the soy sauces out there, but it's a bit of a deeper taste, so really good on stir-fries.
Certainly smells slightly different, more... Mm. Yeah, more... mellow, rounded. I don't know if that's the right sort of term.
Yeah, it's not just salt.
No,
if you know what I mean.
No,
it's a bit more
really
to it.
Interesting. And you've got three flavors: there's a teriyaki one, a barbecue one, and an all-purpose one.
Mm.
So I guess something for everyone. I guess you could probably just, you know, turn that into a marinade for a nice bit of bit of something on the barbecue.
Exactly. Yeah, it's great as a marinade. I mean, you can put it in soups, sauces, or even salads. Some of our clients add it to as a salad dressing, yeah.
So is there any salt in there at all? Is it?
No, there is salt, yeah.
There is a little bit,
yeah,
but not
there is.
Not very much.
Not quite as high as some of the soy sauces.
Which can be really high, can't they?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. But again, gluten-free and it's natural.
Yeah, completely natural. So with some of the soy sauces, that's one of the main selling points as well. When you buy a sort of the cheaper version soy sauces that are a pound or two on the supermarket shelves, the soybeans haven't been naturally fermented because it just takes too long. It's a very lengthy process. And so that process is sped up through adding various additives and chemicals. And with ours, we just wanted to keep it really simple so that, again, that takes a few months to ferment and the ingredients are added together slowly and you get a rounder fuller flavour and it's just purely natural.
So,
really interesting stuff. And, I mean, a certain trend that seems to be coming through all of this, and we're about to look at one of these kind of sappy honey-looking things Steve just kind of picked up at the other end of the table. But health and natural and good for you seems to be a huge part of this whole range. Is that something that you have intentionally kind of put through everything?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we just wanted to keep products as simple, as natural as possible, really. I mean, with some of them, you know, for example, the powdered products that we have, sometimes you have to add a little bit of starch. There's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the product just doesn't work on the shelf and it doesn't keep very well. But with all of them, we just looked at the products that were out there and just thought, with the vinegars, why are they stripping it of all the goodness? There's no point, you know. And we wanted to keep good quality products and keep it natural.
Now I'm trying to dive into a bag that's got little spoons in, so excuse the noise. I'm dying to try some of the vinegar as well, if that's okay.
Sure.
So Vicky's opening the nectar as we speak. So, but I'm going to try just a really small bit.
Oh, Steve, you're going to get it everywhere.
No, hold on.
He's taking his medicine. He's got like a tiny little plastic spoon.
Wow. So I've got my spoon. I've licked that one. I'll better put another one in. Hang on. So, that's a completely different taste from normal processed vinegar.
Have a go at the coconut nectar. So this is just very simply the coconut sap collected from the inflorescence of the flower of the coconut tree, and heated. And you get this syrupy substance, which looks a bit like honey, but is a bit more caramel tasting.
It's got a real
very
caramel.
Like molasses-y as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool, but it's quite runny.
Yeah, it's a really caramel taste. It's lovely. Not too sweet, though. It's
It's not overly, yeah. No. Certainly not on your sort of golden syrup sweetness.
Do you like the vinegar?
I'm talking to you. Yeah,
looking forward to trying
it.
Vinegar is absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
Oh, we've all gone quiet. Sorry, it's just
just completely shut us up, hasn't it? So, so we've gone through the products there. What's new in your range as well? What's the most recent product you've produced?
We do have a couple of flavoured variants of the vinegar. We have one with chili and ginger, which goes down quite well, especially in Asia. Actually, that one's gone down. We have an organic certified coconut milk powder, which is actually, I think, we're the first on the market in Europe with that one. And what we actually we produce some of that in bulk for small manufacturers, actually chocolate manufacturers, a bit like yourselves. And because that works for dairy-free chocolates and snack bar manufacturers as well, and some yogurt makers, these kind of things.
So it's just not direct to public. Obviously, you've got some. B2B as well you're looking at? Whereas, yeah.
We do a bit of B2B. Yeah, we have. So we have five distributors in the UK. We do direct to the public as well, but primarily wholesale. We do a tiny little bit of on the bulk side. But but we now export to five countries as well, and that's slowly growing. But in the UK, we're mainly in the independents.
So, Ed and Rich, do you export at all? Are you exporting anything at the moment?
We don't, no.
You don't?
No, it's definitely on our list. I think there's a massive market for organic, particularly in Northern Europe. But it's just such a growing sector.
Yeah.
But we'll come on. I think our focus at the moment is establishing ourselves in the UK, and then we'll look to expand.
How hard was it, Vicky, to establish sales to overseas as a UK company?
It came quite naturally for us because we just had so many queries from abroad. And actually, we found that with the UK market, especially with London, I think if you're going to have an organic product, it's always launched in London. So London is kind of the centre of the world, really, for organic produce, and everything gets going here. And we found it quite crowded. And so naturally, it felt right to go abroad and talk to other people who were looking for produce over there.
Yeah, I mean, what sort of markets are your biggest at the moment, and where would you like to be in terms of other markets? So
yeah, well, we export now to the Czech Republic, Dubai and Qatar, Hong Kong and Singapore. We would love to. We're in some discussions in the Nordic markets because they're very big in natural and organic products, and in the German market as well. A huge portion of what they consume is organic, far bigger than in the UK. So we're looking at those markets, and they'd be fabulous ones to reach.
It sounds like a bit of a challenge where the original raw ingredient is coming all the way from the Philippines to London. You produce a lot of the products here, even though some of them are kind of almost ready to go straight from where they come from. And then sending it out again. It sounds expensive to kind of keep moving the stuff around. But
well, it's a huge problem, I suppose, with any small business, but with cash flow, because we purchase product that then takes a month to be produced in that country. We then ship it over, which takes anywhere between 8 to 10 weeks to get here. That we then customs clear it. It then sits with a manufacturer. We take a month to get a manufacturing slot.
Wow.
So actually, even there's a huge trade gap of about 5 months, but kind of forecasting demand from that is very, very difficult.
Especially because you're only 18 months or so in, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's almost like you've maybe gone through, you know, only a handful of iterations of, you know, ordering through to delivery. It must be a real challenge, much more so than all the challenges that we already know about food companies trying to do things just here and sometimes even just from their kitchen table, where it's about as close to home as it gets.
So I assume you guys face exactly the same issues with some of the cocoa supply or other raw materials in terms of the time taken to purchase to get it.
We're a little bit luckier in the sense that we can kind of turn around roughly over 2 weeks, three weeks.
Right, okay, so it's a lot quicker.
Because we contract our volumes at the beginning of the year for most of the raw materials, so the biggest one being the cocoa beans. We'll contract that at the start of the year, which gives us a guaranteed amount in stock that we can call off after 2 days. So we're really lucky in that position. But I mean, I feel the pain in other areas.
Yeah, definitely. But I guess in all these products, both with the chocolate with Dozy and Dam, and then all the coconut products with the coconut company, they do have a fairly long shelf life. So in terms of either as the raw material, as it's kind of moving around, correct me if I'm wrong, it's not like you're trying to move something that is perishable that takes 5 months from door to door.
Yeah.
I guess that's one good thing about it.
That does make it easier, yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
So could you see any of this find its way into your chocolate?
We'd love to. I mean, we've tried many, many times to change the sweetener away from just using organic sugar. We're yet to find one that tastes as good as another bar with just organic sugar, but as soon as we can, I mean, we're just always experimenting. I love the taste of coconut sugar in general, and if we can work it in at some point, we will definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. And one of the other things I've just been looking through my notes is the all of your products, Vicky, are ethically sourced as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how important that is to this whole process?
Yeah, so we really have some great links with two of our, well, all of our, but specifically two of our farmer cooperatives in the Philippines. And we work with a lady, as I said, who produces a lot of our sap products, and we work very closely with her, and we go to see her once a quarter out there. And she really looks after her farmers and the people who work closely with her as well. And she's doing some really great things out there. And we've said that we want to keep working with her and with her only for these products. Mm. She's actually helping the local community. She's building a little kindergarten. She's built a little health centre. All very basic stuff, but you know, it's just growing, and that community is really benefiting from the factory around her.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So is it like a cooperative approach to production out there, or is she's buying in from local farmers herself?
She's buying in from local farmers, and the farmers work the area where the coconuts are naturally grown around there and have done for many years. I think one of the big problems that they face is that quite regularly, unfortunately, there are typhoons in the Philippines, and the coconut trees are just by the nature of them. They're often, you know, taken down by those typhoons, and that really affects the farmers around there. You know, we just work with her, and we've helped donate little bits towards you know, helping these people during difficult times. And we've always you know, we're certainly not going to turn her back if she hasn't got any, you know, some good supply. We just want to work with her, and just we're very patient and say let's just get through this and help her into better times.
So I assume there's commercial coconut farming as well going on as well, because that you said that's more natural farming. Yeah.
Well, yes, it is. I don't think there isn't, for these sap products, certainly there isn't really huge commercial factories. It's still relatively niche. I mean, most of the produce that she produces, or any of the guys that coconut vinegar or the sauces come through, are really sold in the Philippines. They're not really exported that much yet, because they still are, you know, to
very
the rest
new.
Of the world.
It's a local thing.
They're mm-hmm. quite new. Yeah. Mm. Although she's been making it for 30 years, but it's just Europe doesn't know about them.
Well, they do now. And
yeah,
it's brilliant.
Exactly.
Is it something that we can buy just like as consumers? You can buy it online or can buy in the shops. Where are you stocked at the moment?
Yeah, we're certainly on lots of websites, and we've got our own as well. But we're with Planet Organic, Whole Foods, guys like Revital. I think we're with something in the reach. Difficult to tell sometimes, but we're with about 200 independent health food stores now as well.
So. Well, fantastic! It's very impressive for just 18 months, especially when there is this kind of massive supply chain as well. Not massive, but it's very long time anyway.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, very impressive.
No, I think it's great. I think the products are lovely, particularly like the coconut nectar.
Thank you.
I just really like that.
An unusual one,
yeah. Very, very interesting. I mean, that's the brilliant thing about this show. Obviously, we have our lovely guests who've joined us just for today, but you know, I get to enjoy all these wonderful products every single week, and it's just an absolute joy and a pleasure to meet really, really interesting people who are doing really interesting things, and you know, pushing forward the food industry, the food system, and also our palates as well. You know, I'd never even knew that you could make vinegar out of coconuts until about a couple of hours ago, and it's absolutely fantastic.
No, I'm going to have some more of the maple toasted rice and pink salt in
Steve's
a minute.
Steve's just going to keep digging into the chocolate. I think I might join him. We'll go and have a cup of tea afterwards.
Yeah.
But it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. Vicky, before we wrap things up, just let us know where we can go to find you online, follow you on various social platforms and what have you, so we can keep in touch.
Definitely. Yeah, we're at thecoconutcompany.co.
That's a brilliant URL. Fantastic.
Yeah, great.
And just a reminder, dozyanddam.com.
Yes. Yep. If you can't spell it, Google it.
Doisy.
And look out for the amazing packages on the shelf, because the packaging is absolutely brilliant. So, and I might go and make myself a lovely Thai curry later. Now I've had some of that. Yeah.
That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, everybody in the studio, for joining us this week. It's been an absolute pleasure. I hope you've enjoyed yourselves and have tucked into plenty of delicious things. Thank you for joining us and giving us your time. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week.
Yeah. Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks guys.
Thanks a lot.
See you later. Cheers. Bye.
Bye.